Blog Talk Radio.
You ever kill anybody?
Are you kidding? I went to Princeton to avoid all that shit.
What am I doing here, man?
John, have you ever seen a crack baby? Newborn crack baby, 6 hours old, screaming its heart out because it's going through withdrawal. You know, over the course of the next year, it doesn't learn to crawl or walk or talk on time. It's got deformities. Physical deformities, mental deformities. It's got brain damage, lowered IQ, dyslexia, God only knows what else. Maybe it goes to school, but it can't learn. And it's violent, so it gets in trouble with the law. It's unable to form any kind of close emotional ties, so it's faced with the prospect of going through this hideous, miserable life completely alone. And there are millions of these babies, John. There's a whole generation of your people who are being destroyed before they are even born. Because these guys, Barbosa, Gallegos, Guzman, are bringing that shit into this country. Now, do you remember what you're doing here?
Yeah. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to another edition, folks. A grandiose edition of AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. This is the Midweek in Review edition, folks. And once again, it is sweltering. The apple is baking once again. The call-in number for the uninitiated is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Listen, we have a lot to get into, folks. This is a 90-minute blast of edutainment. Always trying to give you the best of urban alternative music as well as information. Lord knows that the conventional soothsayers, if I can call them that, are not giving you that. So we're going to give you what you need, not necessarily what you want, but what you need. Folks, let's go to a quick groove. This is Gil Scott Heron, the late Gil Scott Heron, Me and the Devil, Me and the Devil. Once we get to the groove, I should say first the groove, then the discourse. Hold on. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
okay, folks, just giving you a skosh. Again, we do give you the best of urban alternative, black rock, Afropunk, and I'll discuss Afropunk later on in the show. This is the Midweek in Review edition, folks. That was the late, great Gil Scott Heron, and that was Me and the Devil. Of course, you probably know his better-known hits, Johannesburg and The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. He is sorely missed, a talent, an addict, and also a parolee. He did some time because of drugs, if I'm not mistaken, but unfortunately, if it's not crime or drugs, even the geniuses are taken out because of addiction. Nevertheless, the show must go on, folks, and I could not do the show without any kind of true efficacy, without this man of knowledge and wisdom. Two different things, by the way, knowledge and wisdom. Captain, you're needed on the bridge once again. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before. Today, I enter into your midst as a Methuselah type of sage. Keep in mind, the Methuselah types lived for 1,000+ years. So through your experiences, you could become very wise. Now listen up. Now listen up. Mr. Del Toro, Guillermo Del Toro, I have a lot of respect for this man. Any man that comes along and says, I do not want the square-jawed white person in the stand-up type of role, get out of here, Tom Cruise, let's go with Idris Elba for this spot, is definitely worthy. He said, after watching Luther, by the way, is a series that Afro-Nerd, the great Afro-Nerd, is a big, staunch supporter of, and he passed it on to myself. Very good series, by the way, where you can see Idris Elba. Anyway, BBC, I believe, situation over there in England. But anyway, any man that comes along and says that, he is definitely worthy. He is definitely worthy. And now the critics are saying that this is a really good movie. The movie I'm talking about is Pacific Rim. Some of them are even saying it is a great movie. Now, that being said, I suspend time and space. There's only one event that matters. Everybody must go see Pacific Rim this weekend. That is it. There's nothing more. Now, for those of you that are married and you have a few children, take the kids, get in the car. If the woman is acting a little fugazi, you know, one of those mob movie terms, if she's acting a little fugazi, let her stay home. Take the kids. You go ahead. Kids always will love monsters and robots, and go out and enjoy yourself. I say it once again. I suspend time and space. There's only one event that matters. I will it. I command it. Everybody go see Pacific Rim. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Okay, the reviews on this thing must be really good in order for you to spend time and space, sir. Because normally when you and I and the rest of the inner sanctum go to see these movies, you have mild defecation moments on these films. Mild. So this when you say this is an event, it means it's probably a good movie. So I'm gonna trust your barometer on this, sir. Once again, folks, the great Captain Kirk. The call-in number, this is Afro Nerds Midweek in Review edition. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Remember, the water is warm. Don't be scared. We don't bite much. Feel free to give us your questions, protestations, your laments, what have you, and we will discuss it and unpack it and wax on it. All right, a couple of anecdotal things I want to get into, folks, before we get into the meat and gristle of the discussion this evening. First up, I have to revisit the Joe Madison debacle. For those who may be unfamiliar with what I'm talking about, the last show, I played a clip of the legendary broadcaster, now SiriusXM, now with SiriusXM, exclusively SiriusXM, Joe Madison. I called in, and there was discussion on New York's stop and frisk policy and about profiling. And not to rehash the entire thing, but it is a controversial policy. I liken it to urban data mining, just like Mr. Snowden, who's on the run now. Hopefully Venezuela or someplace will take him, maybe. He's on the run. Obama and his minions, not unlike Despicable Me's minions, his minions are after this guy because he disclosed something that I suspect many Americans were already aware of, that such a thing as people going through your crap to determine your demeanor, to determine your intent as an American citizen because of terrorism. We have intra-racial terrorism in many of our urban centers. And I find it amusing that I'm listening to more shows. Shout out to Open Line. Open Line is new this week. I've mentioned Open Line. I've been a guest. Open Line is a show that's been on for many years in New York. And now they're on Sirius because they were demoted, so to speak. They had a two-hour program on the weekend, on Sundays. And then all of a sudden it was demoted to an hour. And somehow, through some machinations, now they have a full 5-day-a-week show on SiriusXM, Open Line Nation. Now I'm hearing more and more urban radio programs. I'm not going to say it's a deluge, but I'm seeing more and more or hearing more and more programs slightly talking in a Captain Kirk Afro-nerd-esque tone. I'm hearing more and more about martial law, and we might have to do something. We might have to bring in the National Guard because of what's happening in Chirac. Shout out to Sergio Mims. That's the new terminology for Chicago. Chirac and Chiganistan and Chi-Syria. Of course, it is what it is. So people are starting to talk the way the Afro-nerd and the captains are speaking. Anyway, Joe Madison gave me somewhat of a tongue-lashing. I thought it was completely unfair. I can take it. No big deal to me. But it's not about discourse with this gentleman. He's a legend. I'm not going to take anything away from his broadcasting career. But when I talked about stop and frisk and about the concept of profiling, I keep on forgetting. It's stupid me. On occasion, I'm thinking some people agree that 2 plus 2 is 4, 4 plus 4 is 8. I'm assuming that certain premises are just, you know, that is just a given. And I have to remind myself that some folks just don't believe that some things are a given, like the concept of a profile. Anyway, what is Afro-Nerd getting to? Why all this meandering? Well, out of curiosity, I just happened to Google gangster clothing, thug fashion. I would implore our audience to just do that. Just Google. You know, these algorithms rarely lie. These Google algorithms rarely lie. Just put in thug fashion, thug clothes, gangster clothes, gangster fashion. When you put those terms in, amazingly, you get a very codified explanation as to what thug fashion is. And it is exactly as I described. Matter of fact, I saw websites. There's a lot of websites and a lot of business connected to terms like gangster clothes and thug fashion. You have actual business names. Thug Fashion Inc., Gangster Clothes Incorporated. You have that, and you have definitions, and you have codified, definitive descriptions as to what gangster clothes look like. And it is exactly as I had described it. So, folks, you are really getting a disservice. I mean, continue listening to these other programs. Please listen to some of these programs and juxtapose them with how we speak I don't think we have such a bent. Sure, we have a bent, we have a brand. But you can deconstruct what we say. You can try to deconstruct what we say. You can challenge us. I'm not going to cut you off as long as you're respectful. I'm not going to cut you off. You have the courtesy of completion on this program. But I'm just amazed that when I called a few people on the profiling issue, and I'm going to wrap it up at this, and I might have mentioned this before, Captain, I want you to weigh in for briefly. This is the hypocrisy of some folks of color, for some folks of color, or the hypocrisy of the belief system of the philosophy of mainstream urban black culture. The philosophy is there's no such thing as profiling. What is a profile? That whole sense of political correctness. It's politically correct to say, I don't know what hip-hop clothes are. I don't know what gangster clothes are. I don't know. People are making millions, hundreds of millions of dollars because they know. You don't know the naysayers and the folks that are all about political correctness. You pretend not to know. But the people that are making millions off of this, they know very well. So, you know, I'm bringing this stuff up because what the hell is going on with you? You can't admit to any of this stuff. I'm seeing it clear as day. They went into even the gang affiliations. They went into a codified, definitive list. There's a great deal of scholarship if you just put in Google gangster clothing, thug clothing. What are we dealing with here, Captain? Why ever? I looked this up just out of curiosity. Didn't kill the cat. I just looked it up, saw what I saw. These people tell me there's no such thing.
Well, I just put it in myself just a minute ago.
What did you see?
And
what did you see?
The crazy obvious thing, I went to pictures. I saw the corporation selling quote-unquote thug clothes. That was okay. But then I said, let me put in images. And then you see the images of black and brown, that's for you Latin folks, we have a terminology, we call you brown, in case those of you who are uninitiated, black and brown. And then they had the baggy pants, the do-rags, you know, they had some of the
earrings.
Some of the L.A. stuff, out here in L.A., yeah, they had the earrings. The L.A. stuff and everything, they got it down. So one could say, let me play devil's advocate now, that Google is totally profiling. Well, the world is profiling. And then one would turn around and say, well, Google at the top is a white organization, and white people always profile everybody. Well, yeah, maybe, that might be true. But if you fit the profile, if it walks like a duck, chances are, what do they say? Finish it off for me, listeners. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, chances are it is a duck. And that's how you're perceived. Perception is reality. Now, it might not be the case. Someone wearing a police uniform walking down the street might not be a police officer, because this is why we have laws. They say you were impersonating a police officer, but you will react to the police person that you perceive to be a police officer because they have on the police uniform. You will react to them as if they are a police officer because perception is reality. They have on the uniform. That's the reality of it. And it's the same way people react when you wear these clothes. That's just what it is. I didn't make those rules. I did not make those rules. That's just what it is. And this is what Google did. Google says, okay, let's look at gangster clothes. Let's look at thug wear, all right? You see very few pictures of, you know, original, you know, like gangster stripes in the suits, because most of these guys are not wearing suits anymore. If they were wearing suits, their business would be different. You know, back in the days, you know, if you look at movies such as, you know, Hoodlum and everything else, you know, they dress what they call in the gangster type wear, but business was different, and those guys were a lot more intelligent than the modern day thug. There's always a difference between a gangster and a thug. They always said the gangster's a lot more intelligent, more refined. He did things in a better way. And a lot of times he makes a lot more money. So anyway, you have a few of those pictures. But most of the pictures are, they look like what we would call the youth running around, the pants sagging, the 9 tattoos, the do-rag coming off their head, you know. Just that look, quote-unquote hip-hop gangster look. That's what it is, with your booty showing. I didn't make those rules. I didn't make those rules. That's Google. So there you have it. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
And again, for the top of the show, we're going to get into some anecdotal data. Not everything's going to be blackety black on Afro-Nerd Radio. And we believe in giving you just general information, whether it's technology, science, culture, what have you. Just one other thing, a musical break, and then we'll get to the rest of the show. What I wanted to get into also, and I've mentioned this before, but I want this to be an MP3 or MP4 file that's on repeat. It's on repeat, folks, that statistically black folks, you know, we're led to believe that many blacks do not believe in the concept of a profile or the concept of a composite. However, statistics show that after 9/11, black folks surprisingly, and even to the Afro-Nerd surprise, surprisingly, they believed in the profile for the Muslim man. What's that about? So for the Muslim man, profiling was okay. And recently, within weeks, because of this Snowden controversy, many urban outlets did not have any, or you're led to believe, they did not have an opinion on data mining. Just didn't care about it. Okay, one can infer that, well, they believe it's a necessary evil. Well, stop and frisk is a necessary evil. Now people are talking, as I said before, potentially if we're to see in Chirac the National Guard or some kind of military intervention, that's a necessary evil. What's the problem? What's the problem? All right, that's it. That's it. That's it. We're going to go to a quick groove once again, folks. Welcome to the Midweek and Review edition of Afro-Nerd. The lines are open, 646-915-9620. Feel free to jump on in. The water is warm. A quick groove, and then I'm going to get back, again, anecdotal data, tricorders, human head transplants. Also, KFC is suing or threatening to sue Thailand's Hitler chicken. You heard me right. Hitler chicken. Wow. The nonsense just doesn't stop, folks. All right. This is Tall Black Guy, not just me, although I am a tall black guy. This is the group Tall Black Guy, Quick Groove, The Big Payback, James Brown's The Big Payback, their remix. Let's groove a little, give you a little bit of new revised funk, and then we will continue with the discourse. Hold on. The Big Payback. Let's get to it. We'll be right back. You know, just as the Hulk, I'm going to get into an afterword moment now. Just as the Hulk, he gets stronger as he gets madder. I get more sharp tongue when the music gets funkier. Maybe it's not a good idea to play funk with me. And then I start to talk because the funk just ignites me more. It makes me like the Black Hulk. Once again, that is The Big Payback by a Tall Black Guy, Remix. This is Midweek in Review edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk.
I think you're forgetting something.
Yes.
Okay. I think you would do the audience a good justice by also talking about waxing on your feelings pertaining to rap music. I think you forgot about that one.
All right, so I did. You want to get into that now, or do you want to get into the anecdotal
stuff?
Yeah,
get into it now. Get into it now, since we're on that vibe. We're on that type of vibe. Let's go ahead, get into it.
All right. I made a confession to the captain a few days ago, and it's something I've been wrestling with for many years. And it's something that has, you know, not so much now, but was somewhat of a wedge with my friendship with the captain's predecessor, Mr. Starks. And it's something we've, you know, he's always known. We grew up together, Starks and myself, and Starks completely embraced hip-hop from its nascent period. When it was far more innocent, perhaps more innovative, he embraced it. Now, we were both musicians, or I should say, I'll say for myself, a wannabe musician, learning how to play drums, taking lessons, learning how to read music, part of the high school band. You know, I was fortunate enough to have music education and music appreciation in during my formative years, my formative educational years. So, and also the Oracle introducing me to jazz at a very early age. I can't remember not loving jazz or not knowing jazz. I mean, one of my first records, right along with the Jacksons, was also Diodato's, what is it, the name of the song? Diodato's a Brazilian artist, but Brazilian jazz artist. Rhapsody in Blue. Rhapsody in Blue. His reinterpretation of Rhapsody in Blue. So I was that kid that bought that along with That Nigga's Crazy, also, Richard Pryor. Before everyone, quote unquote, was a nigga. And it was just Richard Pryor doing it. I was buying that and buying the great bassist Stanley Clark and Herbie Hancock. So I was into a lot of jazz at a very early age. Classic jazz, jazz rock, fusion, you name it. That's what I was raised on. I was raised on that and soul funk. That's my base. So when hip-hop came along, I was very critical of it. I was that little kid that was just not with it. I thought that it was very much a fad. I thought that LL Cool J was a fad. Now it's 30 years later, and he's still here. I just thought that the fact that they relied heavily, well, let's put it this way, it was seductive. It because it relied heavily on the records of the jazz and the funk during the nascent period. Relied heavily. You could not, especially when it was a exclusively New York phenomenon, Captain, and you know this full and well, you were not going to have a hit unless you had a James Brown sample. That's
indeed.
It. James Brown has to be, James Brown, maybe George Clinton second, had to be the most sampled artist in the early days could not do it right unless you had James Brown in the background. So I had this weird relationship with the music because I felt on one side, where is the musical tradition? And I know Sergio Mims is listening, and he's a classic music aficionado. You're talking about a musical art forms that are studied at a higher level. You know, people get doctorates in these musical art forms. And jazz, truth be told, you know, listen, the early underpinnings of jazz comes from Storyville, Louisiana, New Orleans. That's where it comes from. And it comes from the street. Believe it or not, jazz comes from the street. Brothels. It was played in the brothels in New Orleans. And then somehow, but you see that it went through periods where it classed itself up, was played before gangsters, not gangstas, but gangsters, to being played before kings and queens and monarchs. Jazz classed itself up because it was a truly dangerous art form, Captain. It dispelled notions of black inferiority. You cannot play jazz the way that when you see the Nicholas Brothers dance, when you see Louis Armstrong perform, when you saw Sidney Bechet perform, when you saw Duke Ellington perform, and Billy Strayhorn, who was his right-hand man, America's composer, preeminent composer. When you see these gentlemen and gentlewomen performing jazz music, the racists had to scratch their heads. Oh, no, mind you, they still call it jungle music. When you listen to old radio archives, archival recordings of radio announcements of Duke Ellington, they would say things like, "Now we're about to listen to the wild jungle rhythms." Now, this is Duke Ellington. You know what Duke Ellington looked like, right? The wild jungle rhythms of Duke Ellington or Count Basie. But it didn't stick. It couldn't stick because it's too damn sophisticated. It classed itself up. So what is Afro-Nerd talking about? So I'm coming from that tradition. And when hip-hop comes along, I'm seeing cats from the street that are rapping over records, over the records that displayed the genius. The records, the samples themselves, Bob James, Westchester Lady, who else can I think of? I forgot the gentleman that just passed on. It's quite a few jazz artists that were sampled. Ronnie Laws and all these people. Herbie was sampled. When these people were sampled, the sample itself, the music, the origin of the sample is the genius. So I mean, you scratch your head if you're going to be honest. If I'm going to be honest, I've always grappled with whether hip-hop is truly the end-all, be-all as a musical, as a true studied musical art form. I remember going to music stores and buying drum sets, buying trap sets, and buying drum pieces, and buying sheet music. And you would go there and see wind instruments. You see the piano, you'd see instruments. Now, years later, the turntable has snuck in to the music store. Let me repeat that. The turntable has snuck into the music store, and now that is considered a musical instrument. So you have to understand, I love hip hop begrudgingly. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the music, you know, how am I going to dislike it completely because James Brown is there somewhere? But I want folks to sometimes, let's be honest what it has become. It has become a minstrel show. And even the early hip-hop that I grew up on, the golden age hip-hop from the early 90s, that hip-hop, which some could say had a certain degree of innovation, and the fact that the music did and does garner billions of dollars, now it has regressed to the point, ladies and gentlemen, that anybody can do it. It is a hustle. When the artists, in quote, the artists of today talk about it, they don't talk about it with any kind of verve or excitement or even attaching themselves to it as an art form. Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, these folks never extricated themselves from jazz as an art form. Never took themselves away from it as an art form. Some of the the maturing hip-hop artists, they will still refer to it as an art form. The newer cats, not so much. It is a minstrel show. But I wanted to tell you, and just to be honest with myself and honest with the audience, I respect hip-hop to a certain degree for what it once was, but I have to be honest, I've always had and continue to have kind of a tug-of-war with it really being a musical art form. The folks know I'm a Prince supporter. The man plays 20 instruments. He plays jazz, blues, rock. When you see someone like that or see a jazz artist or a real soul artist, a person who can really sing, when you see Chaka Khan blow, hip-hop is really low on the totem pole for me. And I think people of color, black folks, I think they really need to be honest. If you're going to be honest, you know, Al Green can't be touched. So I'm going to hit you people. Some of these folks cannot be touched. And Al Green, come on now. You know, Bill Withers, these folks, I'm going from jazz to blues to R&B, these folks, Bessie Smith now. Holler if you hear me. These heavyweights, Stevie Wonder, these heavyweights, Jimi Hendrix. This is where we were, and now I have to pretend that Meek Mill is real. I have to pretend that Drake is real. Yeah, maybe, Catherine, didn't I say it? Maybe I should have played a funk record. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. You're not going to like me when I'm angry. You're not going to like me when I get angry. That's it. I just want to disclose that. Your thoughts, sir?
Well said. Well said. I'm not going to add too much into that due to time constraints, but it was well said. Maybe one time we'll have to do just a music show where we just get all of our venom out, or we dedicate 1 hour to just getting all our venom out, based on facts, of course, based on facts. Get all of our venom out, you know. Just a suggestion. Just a suggestion.
Well, listen, Dr. Cosby, who hangs with the Oracle as, executive producers of this show somewhat, they overhang for this show as far as a morality play. As far as a morality play goes, the Oracle and Dr. Cosby and other folk, other maturing adults, they overhang over the Afro-Nerd experience. Right? Dr. Cosby, especially, 2004, he blacked out. The street term, he blacked out. He had a moment of, you know what? I'm going to have to tell these Negroes how I really feel. I'm going to have to do that. So, conversely, the Afro-Nerd is going to become unchained every once in a while. I'm going to have to tell you how I really feel. And I will play the urban alternative. I will play hip-hop here. And I'm not going to say I dislike it completely, but I wrestle with what it is. I have to compartmentalize what it is in comparison to other art forms in the musical tradition. You heard Wynton Marsalis on the last show. Branford and Wynton, both brothers, Branford has a different opinion. Branford has worked with some hip-hop artists. He's worked with the bomb, Public Enemy's Bomb Squad. He has more of an affection. I think Branford even played a bit on the remix of Fight the Power, Public Enemy's Fight the Power. But he admitted the way those cats sampled, it was so indistinguishable and so creative, he had to acknowledge it. Then there was Sean Puffy Combs in the mid-90s, just ripped you off. So I just had to make that admission. We have a phone call. We're going to open up the lines. And we also are going to give you anecdotal data, because this is the Afro Nerd Show. Not everything's going to be black, black, blackity black. All right, let's go to the phones, and then we'll also give you some anecdotal data. Caller, welcome to Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, 703. What's up? Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
DC. Good evening. This is George from D.C. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good, man.
Hey, I have a quick question before I get into your very good topic. Hey, Captain, I remember maybe last year, a year before, you was involved in some sort of documentary or something. Is that available on DVD? I don't know. I may have gotten that wrong, but you were involved in some type of media project. I just want to know, is that available now?
Okay, you're talking about the Gil C. Alisea project? I believe that's the one you're talking about?
I believe so. You were a guest on a show or something I saw.
Yes, that's the Gil C. Alisea project. No, it's actually not available on DVD. No, it's not. You know, but if you need, if you wanted to see it, I could get it to you.
Okay. I'll send my info on the, I don't know if you're looking at the chat room. I could take a look at that.
Or just email us. Email us at afronerdblog@yahoo. Afronerdblog@yahoo.com.
Will do. Hey, get back to your music diatribe. I agree with it. I'm a child of the 70s, so I track the same way. But let's be careful. Let's not romanticize everything. There's been a lot of bad jazz albums. There's been a lot of bad funk albums. But the thing is musicality. And I think the biggest difference between our generation and generation now, you know, because of budget cuts or whatever, a lot of music has been stripped out of the public schools. Not an excuse, Steve, but I know we can walk that dog later. But as me and you know, when you was at Hampton, when I was at Howard, band culture is a big thing in HBCUs.
Yep.
And you don't see it anymore.
True.
You don't see it from people, you know, Philly, New York, or whatever. It's mostly people, you know, from the South, Atlanta, the Carolinas. You know, it's more of a band musical background that starts in elementary school. So I think that plays a part. And another thing I want to also discuss is, we as a people, we don't document our music well. I subscribe to Jazz Times, Downbeat, and all that stuff. It's not us preserving our music. So when you want someone else to preserve and interpret what you do, you get what you get. I mean, we're so now into personalities and blogs and all this foolishness, you know, the lower tier blogs that you speak of. But no one is preserving the music. I mean, there's some good stuff coming out now. Janelle Monáe, I know Omar's been around for a while, so let's not sweep it all in one big pile and call it a bunch of doo-doo.
Hey, listen, I played that. You know, Lee, that's what I play here.
I know.
I'm trying to save black folks. Omar pretty much.
Radio. I got off that terrestrial radio ship almost 13, 14 years ago when I saw it was spewing hip-hop and, you know, it was, you know, once upon a time when you had local ownership, you know, radio, black radio, so-called black radio was a little more diverse, especially up in New York. You guys had Gil Bird, you had Black Talk, you had a jazz hour, you had reggae hours, you had soca hours, you had all that stuff. And now it's all mostly gone because of how radio was sort of you know, it was the ownership was changed within the last 10 or 15 years.
Thanks to Bill Clinton on that one. Thank you, Bill Clinton.
All right, gentlemen, great show. And I'll definitely send an email, Captain, so I can I definitely want to check that project out and support you. Take care, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
As always.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I just had to be honest, Captain. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm not saying listen, I will play hip hop. This hip hop, I can't not. Because listen, the Oracle will even admit. And I remember this. I remember as a kid, he was in the shower singing. I heard him singing make him clap to this. make him clap. He couldn't stop singing. Rakim was to be acknowledged. Rakim, it was something. It was something there. So I guess even within the hip-hop genre, when there's something that is real and is there, we will acknowledge it. Rakim, actually, in my collection, sits under Miles Davis. I mean, as far as, like, you know, CDs that I find, that I take seriously. So I don't want to defecate on all hip-hop. And you know, he's correct. Our friend from D.C. is correct. You know, not everything within the R&B, blues, and jazz tradition was stellar. But there's a lot that is and that was. There is a lot. You know, there's a lot to sift through. There's a library full of stellar, incredible work where the talent, the intelligence, the musicality cannot be denied. Something that you can look up to and not wince about it. But what's happening right now, it's such a hustle now. The music scene is such a hustle. As he said, George said, it's done on the cheap, and we're suffering for it right now. So we're trying our best here to give you the urban alternative, to give you the jazz, the acid jazz, the afro punk, the funk, you name it. What conventional radio refuses to play, we'll play it here. We do what we can. All right, before we go to
Hold on. There's something I'm going to have to interject now because of this. Now, something I have to interject because I don't hear anybody talking about this anywhere. In general, the music business, what happened in the music business is this, among other things, but this is one of the key factors for the downfall. The video. We went from air-based, totally air-based, to something that is visual. Let me repeat that. We went from air-based to something that is visual. If you take away the visual aspect, that means your musicianship has to be impeccable. That's the first thing that you're going to hear. You hear the record, then you want to see the artist perform or what have you, and if the artist happens to be good-looking, then they're good-looking. You know, it doesn't matter. Also, at the given time, before the video, record companies were signing people. Tina Marie hinted to this. They signed to a 10-year deal. You wouldn't get an album out until after 4 or 5 years because you were working underneath people who were great musicians. Maybe you sung some background vocals or something. And then finally you got your shot. You honed your craft. Record companies stopped doing that. They figured out we can give them the visual. We can put, this is why we have a Britney Spears. This is why we have a Beyonce. This is why we have a Rihanna. This is why we have a Christina Aguilera. All good-looking people. Don't get me wrong. Christina Aguilera can sing. And Prince said he was impressed with Beyonce. But that's besides the fact. That's besides the point. This is why we have these people. Going back in the 70s, it didn't so much matter. If the artist happened to be good-looking, hey, that's fine. That's nice. It was air-based. Then visual. Now it has become visual. They use the visual to sell the music. It's visual first, then air-based. If we pull out all the videos, let's say we never went to the video format where you have video, where you're watching hot tracks and everything else that we used to watch back in the day. We have a different music game. Different music game right now. Is this something to think about? Food for thought. That's all I wanted to add.
No problem. We will have to revisit this. I mean, we always talk about this here and there.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually gone in depth as far as the musical tradition and my feelings about it. But we will undoubtedly revisit this, ladies and gentlemen. Again, midweek in review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Trying to get through some things briefly. This is the Afro Nerd show, and it's actually something just to kind of put out there, just for your own edification. Because I find it odd that on urban – I shouldn't say I find it odd, but I guess I'm disappointed that on urban radio, you're given the impression that black folks have no other interest but just black sociological banter. Like, we can't give you just general information. You know, there are black folks that are certainly futurists, even on a corporate level, even as to what – even what the lower tier are doing, Captain. I'm going to throw that crew in there. They are texting, sexting, texting, smartphones, tweeting. You know, there's all of this. There's so much evidence that black and brown folk are about technology and video gaming, and yet it's rarely discussed on urban radio. You know, we're stuck. We're literally stuck in some kind of weird regressive box, this box of this is what you black folks can only talk about, and that's it. So anyway, anecdotal data, just for S and giggles. The captain sent me this link to It sounds incredible. I'll believe it when I see it. But this link about the possibility of human head transplants, that might actually be a reality. Now, we've seen, the most famous human head transplant in mythology would be, of course, Frankenstein. And I've always said this, Captain, and I will continue to say it, that whatever your mind's eye will allow itself to imagine, it can become a possibility. It's something about man in man's DNA. If he can imagine something, he or she will try his darndest to make it a reality. So when we talk about fantasy and science fiction, it's really just generations away, maybe a millennia away from becoming a reality. And there's a recent article, I know the Huffington Post talked about this, but it's all over the internet, from a Dr. Sergio Canavero. Now, Dr. Canavero believes that the technology exists today that will allow surgeons to actually remove heads, place them on other bodies. They've been experimenting on animals in this way. And I guess the main hindrance to doing this was connecting the spinal cord. So now they're saying that, and I'm reading this almost verbatim here, I'm looking at it, recent advances have meant that reconnecting the spinal cord is now possible, and it is believed that the breakthrough means that previously fatal diseases could be cured. So, I mean, this talk about the reanimation of organs. We see the 3D printer that has far more implications than just printing tools. They're talking about printing identical body parts. If you need a heart or some complex organ, you can print a direct facsimile, and that lessens the chance of rejection, Captain. So when you sent this to me, the first thing I said was, okay, this has got to be some goofy nonsense. But it seems to be something that, the impossible will soon become possible. Also, my point again, 45 years ago, we saw this artistic device, this prop, that was used in Star Trek, and we've seen it since in all Star Treks now, the tricorder, when Dr. McCoy would analyze your vitals, he would pull out this machine, this device, and it would read your vital signs. It would tell you, really what's going on with you head to toe. The geeks were raised on this stuff. Again, the nerds were raised on Star Trek. Now, lo and behold, it appears that there really is a low-grade tricorder that has come to fruition. Now they're looking at these things, whether it could be on your watch or an actual tricorder-looking thing that can actually read your vitals, that will actually keep a record, your own personal record, and will get you closer to you being able to diagnose yourself. It will continuously maintain your bodily functions, like actually read you minute to minute, day to day. The tricorder, which was once a prop in a Star Trek TV show from the 60s, has now, for all intents and purposes, come to fruition. Your thoughts, Captain?
Well, not to take anything not to go against some of these great writers, Gene Roddenberry, but it was even Gene Roddenberry that did say the truth is stranger than the fiction. Truth is stranger than the fiction. Now, what was he really saying? Now, you see, in society, up is down and down is up. They switch things around here. Most of the technology that you're seeing now was developed between 1920 to 1966. They suppress most of the technology. They suppress it. So the CIA, and you can go back and look this up. Remember, I told I came on the show and told you about anti-gravity, and MSNBC, Fox News, and CNN will tell you that there isn't any anti-gravity, but you can look right up on the Internet, Foo Fighters. You can go back in the 1950 articles of newspapers and you show they discovered anti-gravity, a primitive form. But they'll tell you that they do not have any such thing. So the CIA and other government programs, actually, they had programs where they would bring in Hollywood writers, comic book writers, magazine people, and important well-to-dos. And these individuals, they would bring them in and they would show them technology, the great brave world. Now you might say, now why would they do that? Now I'm coming to that point. Why would they do something like that? And they say, go write about it. Now here's the kicker. You know, I know everyone thinks they imagine these things. And they imagine some things. But if I give you a foundation of the house and I give you the first two floors of a building, you can build it up from there. Now, it won't be that hard. I gave you the foundation. I gave you the first two floors. Make a 10-story building now. So, now you might say, why did they do this? I'm building to that now. You go back to science fiction movies, 1950, 1960, even 1940. Look at the science in those movies. Now we go to 2008, 2009, 2010, 2013. Has the science changed in any of these movies? Has any of the concepts? What has changed is the CGI. It looks a lot better. Now, if these individuals, these great writers, people who write science fiction for movies, novels, and everything else, if they were really imagining everything, how come they're not imagining anything else? We're talking about the same things in 2013 that we were talking about in our 1950. Interdimensionals, extraterrestrials, time travel, teleportation, you know, same type of concepts, warp drive, hyperdrive, you know, different forms of space, same exact thing. If they were really imagining these things, how come they're not imagining anything else? The universe is a big place. It's a real big place. How come the science is just really the same? That's one kicker. Two, now you go back, for those of you who have a scientific brain, 1950s, 1940s, 1960s, how does a science writer get the theoretical science right? It's another kicker. Forget about Star Trek. For Star Trek, most of the science from a theoretical standpoint is right, but they mess up a bit here and there. Most people won't catch it. You go to something called Space 1999. You remember that, right? You remember that series, Space 1999. Theoretically, all the science is correct. How did that happen? How did that happen? Now, one might say, a thinking man, if that's what you are, that they had a concept, then they went to someone who's a scientist and said, give me the equations for teleportation if one could teleport. You know, give me theoretical science. I say you have to have a point of reference. Point being, when the conquistadors came here to America, the natives, this is according to the conquistadors, they said to the natives said to the conquistadors, once they finally understood what they were saying, however they managed to do that, did you come from the sky? Man couldn't fly at that time, could they? So why would the natives say something that if they came from the sky? The reason being is because they had a point of reference. They seen something come from the sky. You always have to have a point of reference. Men, as per rule, are really not that smart. Human beings are really not that smart, contrary to what you think when you start to really break it down. This is the reality of it. Here's another case in point. Now, I'm going to tell you the reason why they did this type of thing. If an alien was walking around in 1975, you would go barking mad. I mean, the alien from another planet, not from another country now.
you would go barking mad. Even though from a theoretical standpoint, in order to breathe this atmosphere, you would have to be germane of this atmosphere. So it would be more or less an intradimensional, different timeline being. Maybe it could be a hybrid. I hope I'm not losing anybody there. So, but just say hypothetically. In 1975, you would go barking mad. Walking around now, you would be like, you would get shot, but you would not go barking mad. You know why? Something we talk about all the time on this show. Meme transfer. You've already been conditioned. So what they found out, these people who are into all this high technology, and this is why they developed these programs, if you just give the public technology, they may and may not take to it. But if you already put it up there in Hollywood, you write about it in magazines, you write about it in all of these different formats where memes can transfer. Television is very big too, and even music these days. It's like you already know how to use it already. It's automatic. So there's a reason for everything, not to burst anybody's bubble. You can go back up and you can look this stuff up if you're willing to take your time and do it. Now, don't get me wrong. They do imagine some things, but that's how a lot of you get a lot of this technology. Something such as a tricorder, it's actually old technology. It's old technology. It's actually old. Cell phones is actually old, too. And it's, by the way, cell phones is actually garbage technology. It's actually garbage because the magnetic energy it radiates, it can give you cancer, that's one, and it also damages the brain. Russia got it right pertaining to the cell phone. The cell phone, they do not allow people, you have to be at least 12 years of age in order to have a cell phone in Russia because they realize it damages your brain. Here, we just let everything go. That's one of the reasons why you can't remember as good, even though you still maybe be, you might be young, 30, you can't remember anything. It has to do with the cell phone or the magnetic energy. That's just by the by. So not to burst anybody's bubble, but this is how the way forward. And they're still suppressing a lot of technology because it would change the whole way, the whole dynamic of the system. You know, if you turn around and you say, okay, here's the total cure for cancer or something, what happens to the medical community? What happens to the medical community? So you have to suppress a lot of these things. It's not conspiracy theory stuff. Remember I told you about anti-gravity and you were able to look it up. So it's not conspiracy. It's conspiracy fact. Because you can go look it up. But they realize something. They realize you read it as a wage slave. Then they turn around and go conspiracy theory on it, and you totally forget about it because you need an authority to confirm everything, every movement that you do from day to day. Am I doing the right thing? How to raise the kids? How to change a diaper? How do I feed myself? That's where they got you. That's why they call you wage slave. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, just some information, folks. I need to, and I will be doing this more in the future as well. I'm always reading books. I know the captain's always reading books. And when we get some of our things straight behind the scenes, we like to make these books more available to you where you can click on it and get it in an instant, download it or what have you. But just for informational purposes, there's a book that I downloaded a few months ago. It's been around for a couple of years. It's called The Singularity Is Near. The Singularity Is Near. It's by Ray Kurzweil. Kurzweil is a pretty well-known futurist, and he's highly respected because when he makes predictions, his predictions are pretty accurate. His predictions are pretty accurate. So this book really goes into the it kind of dovetails off of what the captain's talking about, how certain technologies have remained the same, like the actual technologies have remained the same. But what his argument is that the power of these technologies are increasing. You know, your computational devices, genetic engineering, nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, robotics, all those things, those topics. Like the captain said, we've been talking about robots since the late 1800s. But the singularity, the technology is moving so quickly, and you could tell this. You could tell this by how quickly Apple comes out with a new iPhone. It's moving so quickly, and at such a rapid pace, we don't know what's going to happen. We're expecting all these wonders for the future based on the technology that we. we hope to have thinking robots. I mean, we kind of sort of already do. We're talking about autonomous thinking robots. So, again, check out The Singularity is Near, Ray Kurzweil. It's been critiqued in one sense in the fact that he doesn't really give that much of a downside also. You know, with all this technology, he's talking about it from all the positives that can come out of this, but he doesn't talk about, and I'm not really trying to be funny here, he's not talking about the Skynet aspect of technology. I'm referencing, of course, the Terminator films. He's not talking about the things that could really be negative, but I just find it interesting that he is documenting and predicting, and again, he is to be respected because this guy is usually on point. He's making all these fantastic predictions for the next 50 to 100 years, and the way we're tracking, he may be correct, and he has been correct. So The Singularity is Near, Ray Kurzweil. All right, let's go to a quick group, Captain. When we get back, I want to talk about Thailand's Hitler chicken and Hitler sheep. And Hitler chic. You know, it's hard to say, like, racism has returned. You know? It's hard to say that. It's like LL Cool J, you know, making a comeback. I've been here for years. But there's something to this Hitler fashion and Hitler chicken in Thailand. So we'll get into that in a moment. This is Afner featuring Captain Kirk. Check out a new remix. This is Feeling Good, Nina Simone. I believe our friend Zoe Saldana is portraying her in an upcoming film, to the chagrin of some black folk. Whatever. This is Feeling Good, Nina Simone, Bass Nectar Remix. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
In the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good.
All right, we're back again. Legendary songstress, bar none, Nina Simone with the help of Bass Nectar Remix. Feeling good, feeling good. This is Afronerd featuring Captain Kirk. We got about 15 minutes remaining, folks. Feel free to buzz in if you like. 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. I wanted to talk about this article that I happened to check out a few days ago, and it's a rather, I don't know, disappointing, frightening article. You know, it just goes to show you that this is, you know, racism is a worldwide thing, and I don't know if it's just based on ignorance, but it's, I can't even say this is laughable. I can't say this is laughable, because Hitler is never a historical figure you can laugh at. You can't. People try to do it. Not funny. Anyway, I'm looking through the Huffington Post, and there's an article that's talking about this Thailand or this Thai restaurant that has superimposed the face of Hitler on the body of Colonel Sanders. And it is, they sell chicken, and it's a Hitler chicken restaurant. And, you know, this is in Bangkok. It's garnered quite attention. And actually, there's a gentleman by the name of Andrew Spooner, and he's the author of Footprint Thailand Handbook. So, you know, in his handbook, you know, he's traveling, and he tweeted, and he also has a picture in the handbook, but he also tweeted a photograph of the front of the restaurant, and it clearly has Hitler, the face of Hitler on the body, you know, the bow tie and the apron, you know, the iconic logo that was once Colonel Sanders. We have Hitler on there. So, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is Thailand. We've seen in Asia that we've seen a number of products that have been very derogatory toward black people. You know, some of the products that I talked about a few weeks ago, as far as even my collecting of racist memorabilia from the past. So you know that they existed. See, if you don't take a picture, if you don't get some of this stuff, there's no proof that it ever existed. And people are very adept at washing away the historical record or trying to ameliorate the historical record. Anyway, there's such a thing. I mean, it's kind of dovetails off the notion of Nazi chic. There's such a thing as Nazi chic where people dress up, you know, because of the fashion attached to the Nazi style, and if you want to be shocking and be about taboos being broken, I mean, this dates back to the 70s. Some of punk culture, some of the 70s punk subculture relied on the swastika. Relied on, you know, some of these paraphernalia of Nazism. So I thought, you know, you folks may want to do your fair share of reviewing this on the internet, but, you know, people are trying to I guess take the fight to Thailand now. I know that certainly KFC, they're looking into their legal department. I mean, this is an international thing now. But for them to think that it's okay to superimpose the face of Hitler and to make him palatable, how can anyone think only in Thailand? But this, you know, Ray, what is this? I saw this. This is incredible. Hitler chicken in the modern era, and to be comfortable to do this, and who would want to eat that chicken?
They said the chicken was good, though.
Listen, there's a whole bunch of oven jokes attached to this. That is not a good look. Not a good look. But I think even CNN, they they're covering this. I mean, Nazi Chic has been around for years, but this is, you know, to even go more into it, is Hitler Chic. Because now Hitler as a historical figure is being used as a logo. It's horrible. Horrible. Any thoughts on Hitler chicken, Catherine, and would you dare eat it? I know I would.
I really don't know what to say about this one.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know what to say on this one. I'm taken a bit aback by this, you know. I really don't know what to say. That's it. I don't know what to say. The cat got my tongue on this one, D-Bert.
Well, you know, let's go to something that's a little bit more of lighter fare. You know, I talked about jazz music and hip hop music and kind of my difficulty with hip hop music. But in the last decade or so, I've pretty much, well, I shouldn't say that, even before that, I've always been attracted to urban alternative music. I've always attracted to music that makes me think, that challenges me. Jazz has always challenged me. Blues has challenged me. Maybe Mr. Mims is going to have to submit some classical pieces to my attention. I mean, I have some familiarity with classical music, but I will say I'm more of a jazz guy. In recent years, I've looked into and have embraced the concept of acid jazz and urban alternative, progressive hip-hop, that kind of thing. But there's also this deal with quote-unquote Afro-punk. Now, James Spooner is probably the most noted person attached to the genre because he documented it. Again, he uncovered this notion of all these black kids, essentially flies in milk at the time, going to these punk shows, going to these punk concerts. And then with him documenting Afropunk, it started pretty much a movement. And I believe, hopefully, I think sometime next month, it seems to be every August, Commodore Barry Park in Brooklyn, there's a gathering that takes place. I think it's over, is it a day? I think it's a couple of days, actually.
I think it's
a weekend.
Days, right?
I think it's two days, Saturday and Sunday. And I attended my first Afropunk festival last year. Now, I loved it because I had a similar feeling when I go to the New York Comic Con. You just feel like you're home. I didn't see any minstrels. Minstrels are not allowed. I bought a T-shirt that said, "Hey, hip hop, punk wants its style back." You know, you saw all these artists. And I saw, I got an email right on time from the comic shop's Daryl B. emailing me about the lineup for this year's Afropunk Festival. And it looks like, this is just a preliminary lineup of folks that are going to be at this thing. I believe, maybe, I know Janelle Monáe, she's been a staple at Afropunk. I mean, that's where she gets her bones are from, the Afropunk Festival, going back many years now. But I think she might be on. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know a time she hasn't been at Afropunk. But there's a number of artists that were on the lineup, if I can find my email. But for those who are local to the area, or those who might just want to come on out, regardless, you may want to check out this festival because it is something. Comedian and musician Reggie Watts, he was there, I believe, last year or the year before, Mos Def. I mean, it's kind of an amalgam of different musical art forms. I mean, there's hip-hop there, but even the hip-hop is different. It's just different. But the fact that you can go to an outdoor concert and buy artifacts and buy T-shirts and buy music and converse with all these Afro-punks, and you see, you know, I'm going to be honest, I'm a man, Captain. You would see some beautiful women. That's one thing I was taken aback, and I think I spoke about this, and I will give you a full report this year after I attend. But I remember the feeling of seeing all these beautiful, in shape, attractive women of color of various hues. Actually, one of our guests, our former guest, Michaela Angela Davis, who's a noted stylist, she was there, and she has a huge, fair-complected sister. I'm going to be tribal this one. I get tribal when it's people I like. Fair, huge afro. But just the fact I saw all these natural, varied-hued black women in shape, attractive, no Caucasian hair hats, Captain. It's not like they can't come to that. It's not like someone can't come to the Afropunk Festival with that kind of thing. But it just seems funny that you just didn't see it. I saw a lot of earthy, real black folk, Afrocentrist, you could say, but not necessarily wearing it on their sleeves. Just natural black people, natural, beautiful, attractive black women, and they never looked better. I wish more black women would really undertake that look. Now, we understand all the angst and pain attached to black hair, especially women, unnecessarily so, but it is what it is. It's a reality. But these women, they've embraced it. They look good. They look better than anybody else I've seen.
What you trying to say about black hair?
Well, hey, what am I? Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you embrace it, accept it, you look good. You look your best when it's 80 degrees outside. Actually, it's 90 in the Big Apple now. It's 90 degrees, and you have this full length hair hat on your head in 95 degree heat. It looks foolish. You look like Cousin It. I'm just looking. It's to the point where I can't really talk, at least on a romantic level.
That was good.
I've never really dealt with a woman with the weed situation. I might have maybe one, and for some reason she got rid of it within like a week or two. I never said anything, Captain. I don't know if I told you this. I never said anything, but it mysteriously went away. And I think it's because of just my style. I'm that nerdy corporate type. And you would suspect some corporate types probably like that. But I don't know. But I don't think Michelle Obama has a weave.
Hold on. Now, what do they look like? Would you say repeat that again?
What did I say? Oh, Cousin It, yeah.
No, you gotta get applause for that. You gotta get applause for that. That was a good one.
Well, the length of their hair.
You nailed it.
Well, the length of their hair is suspect, Captain. The length of their hair, and it's hot outside. It's hot outside, and you're wearing an Afro-Saxon toupee.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's a toupee. Isn't it a toupee? That's his point.
You nailed it with that one. Yeah.
I mean, all the machinations, all the histrionic. I'm gonna admit something briefly. We've got about a minute remaining. The audience knows I listen to a lot of other podcasts. Neil Brennan, comedian and former Chappelle Show co-writer. Co-producer Neil Brennan has a podcast. The last podcast he had, and you may want to check this out if you can stand it, was an interview with Corinne Steffens, aka Superhead, and they casually asked her something about her hair, and she said, "Yeah, it's mostly real, but you know, it's the whole, this is a company of white hosts." You know, quote unquote down white hosts. Down, you know what I mean? Quote unquote down white hosts. But the fact that you have to lie about your hair and talk about all this erector set, and it's like, hey, it's mostly real, and it's kind of this embracing of a menstrual thing. You know, you have this long hair to your back, and you're trying to convince people, well, it's sort of real. It's kind of like an inside joke. that you wear a toupee. I mean, come on. We got to stop this, Captain. That's it. Folks, this has been Afro Nerd, the Midweek in Review Edition. We'll be back on Saturday to discuss more stuff with Daryl B. It's going to be hot and heavy because we will probably get into, hopefully it'll be a pleasant experience with Pacific Rim. I think it will. Any thoughts, Captain, before we move on out?
Listen, you cousin it's out there. Be careful. Afro Nerd is going to get you.
Stop the nonsense. All right, let's get into it. Folks, this is The Song I Sing by Cooking Bag. See you on Saturday. It's been real.
Well, that's the song, 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 song. But tonight, the song I sang. Believe, and that's the song.